WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Ken Tucker, critic at large for Entertainment Weekly, sitting in for Terry Gross. My guest, Joy Behar, is best known these days as part of the daily gathering of women, including Barbara Walters, Meredith Vieira, and Star Jones, who form The View. It's a daily ABC talk show that has attracted a fervent following and has received a high pop culture accolade, numerous parodies on Saturday Night Live. A sort of highly caffeinated coffee klatch, The View has made a star of Behar, a stand-up comic who is often the show's voice of skepticism and common sense. Behar has just written a new book called Joystick that chronicles her life as a Brooklyn girl, a young mother, a divorcee, a comedian, and now a View guru. Joy Behar, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you, Ken.
After years as a stand-up comic, you suddenly have this nationwide public forum every morning on The View to, you know, express your opinions seriously and amusingly. How has being on The View changed your life?
Well, I'm much more recognizable now, so that when I go shopping, everyone at Bloomingdale's stops and talks to me. In the old days, it was hard to get a salesperson to even take my order.
How were you originally recruited to be on the show? I'm making it sound like you're joining the Army. You're recruited.
I know. Well, it's interesting. I went to a 89th birthday party for Milton Berle, believe it or not. Someone asked me if I would go and perform at this birthday party, right, as a stand-up. So I went, and I really didn't even know too many people. There were a lot of celebrities, and I got up, and I did some shtick about Milton and his wife, the fact that he's, you know, he was 89 and his wife was 50. And I did a whole bunch of things about how, you know, women, men will, they'll be 100, they'll be in their grave, they're still getting married. And women, you know, can't find a guy. For example, the example I gave was that Salman Rushdie had gotten married 3 times in the past 10 years, and he was in hiding and never even left his hotel room. And yet he managed to find a wife, I think, 3 times.
Right.
Anyway, that was sort of the fun of it. And then Barbara Walters happened to be a guest. And after I was done, she said to Regis Philbin, who was that woman? And then a few months later, I got a call to be on The View with her. It was quite exciting.
And now, is it true that Barbara Walters had to overcome some resistance to your being on the show because some network people thought you were too New York?
Well, too New York is something I've been hearing for a long time. I mean, I don't know what it's a code word for, but it's certainly something I've always heard, is if there's something wrong with being too New York.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to me that the roles that you all take on, that Barbara Walters is like the prim mother, Star Jones is this odd combination of lawyer and diva, and Meredith Vieira is the ditzy middle sister. But you're the one I look to puncture any kind of pretension or to come in with the zinger that'll chop off some argument that's been going on for too long.
I think that's interesting that you say it that way, because Meredith had a bunch of brothers.
Yeah.
You know, Star is the older sister.
Uh-huh.
And Barbara was the older sister, I believe, or else if she wasn't, she had to take care of the family because her father lost his business at some point. And she had to basically support the family. And I was the only child in my family with a bunch of Italian relatives around. And every time they'd get maudlin, my function would be to jump up and say, you know, something funny to break them out of their depression.
Right.
Or if they were pretending to be something other than what they were, I wouldn't let them get away with it. So yeah. We're all doing the same roles that we did when we were kids.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's why it's worked out so well.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? And then, of course, we had Debbie there, and it didn't work out for her for some reason. And it's a funny thing. I wonder if it has something to do with her position in the family.
Yeah, it could be. Now, what was the deal with Debbie? How come she didn't work?
It just didn't work out. I mean, it doesn't always work out, you know, for people. And she's doing really well now. She's got some kind of a pilot deal, and she's on to other things. Move along, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, before you entered show business, you started out in that great stand-up comedy breeding ground teaching English in junior high school.
Right. Junior high and high school.
Yeah. Were you a good teacher?
You know, I worked in a few different schools, and I think depending on the school, I was better in some situations than others.
Uh-huh.
You know, when I taught high school dropouts, I actually, I liked that job very much because they were young people who came back to school.
They wanted to be there.
Were, Yeah, they wanted to be there. They had screwed up in the first place, and now they're back for their second chance. So I like teaching those kids. And a lot of times, they were very bright kids who had gotten some bad breaks. And that's I like teaching kids like that, who were motivated and had some trouble, you know, in their lives, and now were ready to work.
Yeah. But were you a tough teacher?
In some school, one school, I was known to be a strong disciplinarian. I can't believe that they ever said that about me. All I can say is the other teachers must have been horrifying, you know, and just like let them just run amok compared to me, because I was hardly strict.
Right.
But, I mean, I did learn after a while you don't smile for 6 months when you're a teacher, because they'll take advantage of you if they think that you're easy and you're fun.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit difficult. I was much more fun in the teacher's room, I think.
Really? It was a smaller room to work, probably.
Much smaller. I was always looking for a bigger room to work. I think that's what my whole raison d'etre has been.
Right. It seems like it's very typical of female comedians, from Phyllis Diller to Roseanne when she was doing stand-up as Roseanne Barr, to put down their husbands and talk about how stultifying their lives as housewives were. But, you know, in your book, Joystick, this was not a comic premise. This was really what your life was like to a certain extent. Where do we begin? I mean, you had a long marriage that went bad. You had a difficult...
It ended. You know, it was okay. It was good for a while, you know? I mean, marriages to me are not all great or all bad. And even the ones that end in divorce have their great times.
Yeah.
You know?
How long were you married?
I was married 16 years.
Yeah.
And I was happily married for some part of that. But
What percentage of that?
Probably between 40 and 45.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Percent, not bad.
No.
The other percentage of it, I can't even say whether I was happy or I wasn't happy. I was just dying to do something else.
Yeah.
I felt as though I was in a situation that I didn't like being married.
Yeah.
I don't like the institution.
Yeah. What is it about the institution that chafes?
One of my girlfriends said that she doesn't mate in captivity. I forget who said that.
Uh-huh.
But there's something about this idea that you're legally bound that strikes me as being in shackles.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is, but I just don't like it. And since that time, I have a boyfriend. We have a very steady relationship for the past 16 years. But he lives in the Bronx and I live in Manhattan. We don't live together and we're not getting married.
I'm talking with Joy Behar, co-host of The View and author of a new book, Joystick, which is subtitled, What is the Existential Vacuum and Does It Come with Attachments? Gee, it's good that you can laugh at the subtitle of your own book.
Well, it's such a crazy title.
Yes.
You know, I think that you want to know about the title?
Yeah.
Well, one day my girlfriend Jane and I were hanging around being housewives at some point and writing comedy together years and years ago. And we were just talking about the life in general, I suppose. And she said to me, you know what? What is the existential vacuum anyway? And I said, yeah, and does it come with attachments? And it was a phrase that just stuck with me all these years. And then I realized, you know, I grew up in an Italian family. We were all attached at the hip. You know, I don't know if you had a similar situation, Ken, when you were a child, but I lived in a tenement building on the 5th floor walk-up. My grandmother and my aunts lived on the 3rd floor. I was constantly shuttling up and down those stairs. We were together all the time. And when I was taken out to exit 60, I acted as though I was taken there involuntarily. I actually moved there with my husband. I confronted the existential vacuum. I could not tolerate the isolation, you know, because I was not raised like that.
Yeah.
And I guess this phrase, does it come with attachments? It was like almost like some weird phrase that came into my head. But in retrospect, it has meaning to me.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Or I'm not making any sense?
No, absolutely.
I'm making sense?
You're making sense. I mean,
you know, you're in big trouble, Ken. You think that I'm making sense.
Now, I want to go back, though, because you also had this job as a receptionist at Good Morning America.
Good Morning America and I can't shake it, because once you're fired from a television show, a television job, people will drive you crazy with that. But I was a receptionist at Good Morning America, and they love to talk about that, because 6 months after I was fired, I was a guest.
Oh.
So my career took off right after I got fired from Good Morning America, which should be very encouraging to people listening who have been fired or who think that they're going to be fired. It's an opening.
I would think so. But I also would think you would not be one to suffer fools gladly answering the phones.
Oh, I was the worst receptionist. I mean, if you read if you read my chapter in Joystick about the way I would answer the phones, it was really horrifying. But I mean, they'd call me up and they'd say, was that Albert Speer you had on this morning? And I'd say, yes. They'd say, Albert Speer, the Nazi? I'd say, yeah. Well, how could you have a Nazi on television? I'd say, well, look, what do you want from me? I don't book this show. And it's sweeps week, and they would be horrified.
Yeah.
And then they'd call from, I don't know, from Nebraska or up in Vancouver. And they'd say, well, was David Hartman wearing his Lucas Tanner pants? And I'd say, well, can't you get a life? What are you calling me from Vancouver to find this out? I was the worst receptionist, Ken, you can imagine.
Well, good for you. You were destined for bigger things. Well, let's take a short break here. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. If you've just joined us, we're talking to Joy Behar, co-host of The View and author of a new book, Joystick. What was it like the first time you actually went up on a stage to do stand-up? Had you written all your own material and had a little routine to do?
The very first time that I did it, my girlfriend Jane Bowling and I, we had written this material called with a character called Sadie Catalano. She gave news in the neighborhood. It was a character. I wore a hat. I wore glasses. And it was based on a person that I knew in the neighborhood who was quite the yenta. And she would know everybody's business. So we made up this whole routine, which would be like, only a hail of bullets marred the festivities as wedding bells rang for Camilla Rose Caratucci, former bodyguard Carmine Russo has become a faith healer. There isn't a cripple left in the neighborhood, since Carmine has been pronouncing his miraculous words, walk or I'll break both your legs. And this was the material.
Right.
So I got up on stage one night at the Improv and I tried this out. And it killed at 10 o'clock at night. It was a packed house. Then try and get another spot after that. They put me on at 2 o'clock in the morning with three drunks from exit 14 on the Jersey Turnpike. And there I am bombing and dying like a dog. So I was always having setbacks, and it was just it was very, very hard. It would take me 6 months to get back up on stage.
Just because it was just so demoralizing?
It was so devastating.
Yeah.
Even if I would do well, it took me 6 months to get back.
Yeah.
I can't even explain it. I just couldn't. I'm still nervous about it. I'm stuttering as I tell you.
Now, you write in the book, many blue jokes are more easily accepted by an audience when they're spoken by men.
Yes, I think that's true.
Yeah, why do you think that is?
I think that we still suffer from those stereotypes that women are supposed to be fragile and delicate and demure and ladylike.
Mm-hmm.
The word ladylike, I mean, the word gentlemanlike is a mouthful. You hardly ever hear it. But ladylike, doesn't that trip over the tongue?
Right.
So I think that, and to see a woman using a language that we use as stand-up comedians is off-putting to some people. And mm-hmm. a lot of the former generation before mine, for example, Steve Allen is complaining about the language, and a lot of other people do.
Yeah.
And I think that has to do with women.
Mm-hmm.
Partly it's because we're women. And also, we have a microphone in our hands, of course, and that's a little off-putting too.
Right. Were there women that you admired as comedians?
Well, when I was growing up, there used to be the Ed Sullivan Show had a woman named Jean Carroll. I don't know if you remember her, Ken.
No,
I
don't.
How old you are?
No.
But she was the only stand-up comedian I used to see when I was a kid. And then as I grew older, I saw Toadie Fields, who I always thought was hilarious. And
really
Joan Rivers.
Funny. Yeah.
Really, really funny.
Yeah.
And Joan is very funny also, and Phyllis Diller. And those were the role models, basically.
Yeah.
But, it still didn't seem like a logical thing for me to do.
Yeah. Well, the ultimate inner sanctum for at least older male comics is the Friars Club.
Yeah.
This is
a gay bar without the good-looking guy.
But this is a sanctum that you have managed to penetrate, so to speak.
Yes. Thank you. That was a good one.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
I was going to say you hosted a roast for Danny Aiello.
Well, I was the first female roast master for the Friars Club in 93 years.
Wow.
I said to them, well, welcome to the 16th century.
Right.
And yes, Danny Aiello was our subject, and we made the poor man cry. We were brutal to him that day. But I walked a fine line that day because of this. You want to be funny and you want to be blue. Because that's what the roasts are.
Yeah.
But you have to watch it because you're a woman and you want to be like a, you know, a little bit feminine. So I hoped that I succeeded there.
Yeah. Well, if he was crying, I'm sure you succeeded.
He was crying, but he was crying because Richard Belzer, who is ruthless.
Yes, who many people only know now in Homicide, but is a great stand-up comedian.
Oh, I mean, Richard Belzer was one of the most original comedians. Very, very original. He's the one who started this, right, babe? You know, you'll hear people do this all the time and say, I like your hair that way. Yeah, right, babe.
Yeah.
That's Richard, you know. He always was very, very irreverent. And the day of Danny Aiello's roast, I mean, he didn't even prepare any jokes. All he did was he got up and he read reviews of Danny's show, Della Ventura, which was scathing. They were horrifying. And Danny had not even heard them yet. He was in tears. The man, to see a grown Italian man brought to tears is quite devastating.
But it's a great idea.
I said to Richard later, did you feel guilty? And he said, no. It was funny.
Well, if you're just joining us, my guest is Joy Behar, co-host of The View, and she's the author of a new book, Joy Shtick. You write quite a bit in the book about growing into middle age and how it's not a bad thing at all. I liked your line about if you're getting married, suddenly the phrase, till death do us part, doesn't sound so horrible.
Well, it's not the damned eternity it was 25 years ago.
Right. What is it about middle age that's good?
I like middle age very much. I mean, childhood is a nightmare. Let's tell the truth here. And old age can be a nightmare if you're infirm.
Mm-hmm.
So your greatest years, your wonder years, the wonder years when you were like, I don't know, 12,
right.
Those are not the wonder years. The wonder years are between 40 and 60. You get your act together, you're strong, you're healthy, you still look good. You can still enjoy a good orgasm. Hey, who's better than you?
You can go on The View and talk about it.
Exactly.
The other interesting thing I read in the book was that you're friends with both Gloria Steinem and the literary critic Camille Paglia.
Professor Paglia.
Yes.
She's the professor.
How did you get chummy with them? Did you referee some feminist dogfight or something?
No. They don't talk to each other particularly.
Yeah,
they both talk to me.
Right.
Gloria and I, you know each other from the Ms. Foundation. She knows me when I had a radio show on WABC Radio. A lot of people listen to that show.
Mm-hmm.
And I know her. I've done benefits for the Ms. Foundation, and I admire Gloria Steinem tremendously. Camille Paglia is a great comedy fan, and she saw my HBO special. And she got in touch with me and wrote me letters and told me how much she admired me, and we became friends, and I've interviewed her at the 92nd Street Y. Yeah.
Well, now, speaking of Barbara Walters, I know that The View is kind of her baby beyond just appearing a few times a week on the panel.
Right.
In what ways is she involved behind the scenes?
Well, she's one of the two executive producers.
Yeah.
And her company, Barwall, is part owner of the show with ABC.
Yeah.
So she basically, it's her baby.
Yeah.
Is right.
So does she have, like, approval for guests or topics and stuff like that?
Well, she does. She could have it, but she doesn't really have enough time to do that much with it. But, you know, if she doesn't want something, she says it.
Right.
She's involved in the planning of it quite a bit. Of course, she seems so shocked sometimes when we say things at that Hot Topics table.
Yeah.
And that's for real, because she doesn't know what we're going to say.
Really?
And she really does not clamp on us very much at all.
No.
She lets us go. I mean, but then she puts her hand on her head and shakes her head like, you know, be careful what you wish for.
That's right.
She got it.
Yeah. You have to be careful.
Yes. Well, Meredith is the loosest cannon on The View, isn't she?
I think she is, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, now that
you never know what she's going to come up with. She doesn't wear underwear. Her breasts fall out of her clothing. She's wacky.
Yeah. Yes, it's true. Now that Debbie's not there. I got the feeling I'm never going to get the real story about Debbie from you.
Well, you know, we're picking a new girl.
Yeah, are you ever going to pick that new co-host? This is like such a tease. Every morning I come and there's a different young woman there. And I love the remarks you've made about some of them, too. Half of which I can't even repeat here. But
Why can't you repeat it here? I said it on television.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know.
But we are going to announce it on May 3rd, and I think that's Monday.
Oh, okay. All right,
yeah,
finally.
You'll hear the new one. It's down to three of them.
All right, so our long national nightmare will finally be
Thank
over.
Thank goodness.
That's right.
We can rest now.
You'll finally have some new young person to pick on.
Right.
So your life is great now. I'm
having fun.
You're a TV star.
I don't like to say my life is great. I'm a little superstitious. You know, you don't go around saying that. You give me a kanahara.
Oh, okay.
Everyone thinks I'm Jewish because I know every Jewish word. Isn't it amazing? I always say, no one believes me that I'm Italian. A few years ago, I got a call, Happy Hanukkah. I said, Ma, I'm not Jewish.
Isn't it like once you're in show business, you're automatically Jewish?
I think it's once you're in New York.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Reba McEntire is perceived as Jewish, do you?
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
So is there anything that's unsettling in your life? Anything that's still disturbing you? Anything you still want to accomplish?
You know what it is? It's like I don't think about it anymore like that. I'm just sort of on a roll.
Yeah.
I'd like to have a weekend away in the country.
Uh-huh.
But other than that, I'm just doing it. You know, it's not like the old days where I was so blocked and I could not get the confidence and I could not get the, I don't know what was going on with my head, but I just couldn't do it. I was petrified. And now I'm completely the opposite in that way. So I look forward to the day. I look forward to working, to stand up, to going out on vacation, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's just fun.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, thanks very much.
Thanks so much, Ken. This was fun.
Joy Behar. Her new book is called Joystick. I'm Ken Tucker. This is Fresh Air.